Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. After 2 weeks of campaigning in a crowded race, Johor will head to the polls tomorrow. Will this state election be the crucial political barometer of national politics as it's touted to be? Joining us now, we have political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia's Asia Research Institute. Bridget, let's begin with some of the key takeaways that you have observed from the Johor campaign, especially those that might impact federal level politics.
Well, I think there are three things that are important. The first of which is how many people come out to vote. Turnout is going to be very important in this election. I think what we're seeing in the last few days is more indication of more voters coming back. I think it's obviously those from Singapore will not come back, but within Malaysia, I think that will be important. And also those voters that were reluctant to come out, as well as COVID, people who are afraid of COVID, those are the things that are still on the cards. And I think that's one important indication. The second issue is how the opposition does in terms of compared whether or not UMNO actually gets a hegemony and wins two-thirds, or whether or not the opposition parties together, even though they're separate, actually do become competitive. I think this will set in place the possibility of conversations of an opposition coming together after the election, unless, of course, UMNO is able to achieve the two-thirds, which, of course, it is very confident and has been expressing confidence that it will do that. It is my view that that's probably going to be a bit of a challenge for UMNO BN. And the third thing, of course, will be the relative performance of different parties within the opposition and how they perform. And, of course, that will give them leverage vis-a-vis each other in terms of the standing as things move forward for another election, be it a state election or a general election.
Bridget, you've been going to the ground over the last couple of weeks. You're there in Muat today as we speak to you. You know, when it comes to turnout, we're really looking at the mind of the voter. And I know that it is not one thing, but could you help us understand the Malaysian voter? I mean, what have you observed about the kind of aspirations that voters have at this point in time after 3 years of political volatility? What is it that you think they want?
Look, I think Malaysian voters want a better government. And the problem is that many of them are unhappy with all of the options on offer, and that there's a sense of disappointment among different political camps, especially among Harapan voters. And some of them are considering to stay home. I think we're also seeing a very interesting dynamic in the last few days, in particular, of some voters, especially Malay younger voters, looking towards Perikatan Nasional and especially Bersatu in that context. So I think, you know, voters seem to want what everybody else wants anywhere else in the world, a better government and actually representation that actually looks out for their needs. What's been interesting in this campaign is that it's really been deficit discussion of policy issues. There's been no discussions of issues of the economy or solutions for the economic recovery. You know, there has been no meaningful discussions of the issues associated with healthcare, unemployment, and the rising cost of living. And voters have looked to that. But now what has been the way that the contest has been framed is about the respective political fortunes of different political actors and different individuals.
Bridget, there's a lot that's been said about the youth vote in this elections. Undi 18 and the automated voter registration will see 750,000 new voters into the state elections. Is this election going to be the barometer of political enthusiasm among young and new voters? Or are we hearing also about, perhaps, as you pointed out, some kind of apathy and a reluctance to turn out on polling day?
I think it's a good start. It's going to be a good start. We do see a lot of excitement among some of the young voters about the opportunity to vote. I've had the opportunity to speak to at least over 100 younger voters that are going to vote for the first time, under 21. And you know, they're not sure about the candidates. Some of them haven't engaged with politics before. A couple of them didn't even know that there was an election. But the fact of the matter is that there is this kind of an excitement. So I see this as the beginning of a youth power process of which the young are going to have gaining more traction. We're going to see that the young vote in the Johor election will be very important in determining the fortunes, particularly of UMNO, but also other new parties such as MUDA, and of course the fortunes of specific parties such as within Harapan as well will be very important to see how those votes actually shift or change. And so I think it's a beginning of, I think, a change that is coming, because every single state will have a very profound different ethnic and political composition because of the power of young people.
Bridget, there's been a lot of ink spilled on the attempts to form an electoral pack, Pakatan Harapan, touting this a big tent idea, for the most part, successfully negotiating a deal with MUDA candidates and placing them in relatively safe seats, I understand. Though in Larkin, and I want to ask you about Larkin in particular, where MUDA goes up against PKR and, of course, all the major contenders in this race. Do you think in Larkin we will see MUDA having to stand on its own, as it were, not riding on the coattails of Pakatan Harapan, but actually having to prove its strength relative to component parties in Pakatan PKR in particular, and therefore kind of demonstrating proof of concept, right? That young people and their message will get them the kind of votes that will perhaps take them over the top.
Well, I think Larkin is going to be a very difficult contest for both PKR and for MUDA, because of the nature of the fact you do have other big players in the game in terms of UMNO in particular in that contest. And my own sense is that UMNO is slightly favored given the splits that are happening. I think that in my general sense is that this is part of what is going on in this election, in that different parties are basically negotiating or setting down the terms for what would be the negotiations for the general elections coming forward. And so how MUDA performs in Larkin separate vis-a-vis PKR will, of course, be about how they position themselves. I think MUDA as a party has had a lot of excitement on social media, but it's also had to deal with itself with a maiden election, in that it is actually wrestled with having to have machinery and to know the ground, and all of the new parties from Warisan to Pijuang to MUDA have also faced the fact that there's less familiarity of the candidates and less familiarity of the areas because a lot of things were in seat negotiation. I think that MUDA has been affected from a perspective of the MUDA-PKR relationship that has become very sour and also contributed to some of the problems in machinery, and I think it goes both ways. But I think that we are also seeing MUDA's interesting dynamic that they have worked well, particularly with Harapan parties. And so you see a kind of new type of kind of cooperation that has sort of emerged within the opposition on the ground that is a bit different than in the past. And I think these are part of what's happening is as the opposition itself evolves. In particular, what I'm looking at in Johor is Perikatan Nasional, especially Bersatu. I'm speaking to you from Muar, where essentially Muar is Muhyiddin's hometown. He's represents Bagol, but I think it is actually Muar is where has a lot of political base. And I think this northern part of Johor is going to be very interesting. And of course, all of the parties face the real difficult challenge of getting the most votes in a system where there are many, many contenders.
There's been a lot of predictions from some surveys and pollsters saying that Barisan Nasional is set to, with majority, a strong victory in Johor. And I'm just wondering what the consequences are of a strong triumph for BN and UMNO in Johor. What the consequences are for federal level politics, Bridget?
So I think we're first going to see the consequences of kind of overconfidence and a kind of almost triumphalism that has had an impact on the ground. I think that voters that were going to stay home are now actually considering to come out because they are concerned about the hegemony of a return back to an UMNO-PBN dominant system. And I think that's one of the factors that we've seen on the ground in the last few days where there's been this kind of a bit more attention to the campaign and a recognition that the stakes are somewhat different compared to what people had perceived them to be. I think at the same time, what we're going to see is a very different implication nationally. No question, the first thing, Melissa, is that it's going to be a pressure to have a general election as soon as possible. Number two, the implications will be that this could have a kind of a spillover effect for the opposition, both the in terms of creating more fragmentation or in some ways pushing them to come together. I think that if the hegemony is so strong, it's going to be more of a challenge for the opposition to try to come together and to fight that. But I think if it is actually a majority as opposed to two-thirds, we're going to see a very interesting dynamic in terms of pressure for cooperation and sitting down. And then, of course, the third thing is what this means for issues of policy. And I think, you know, the argument that UMNO and BN has been making that this is about stability. But the problems are is that the instability are within their own party. And I think that these issues have not yet resolved. Ironically, I think that what's been interesting on the ground is that many of those issues have continued to percolate even within Johor UMNO, which hasn't had very prominent leadership with anybody besides Hasni Mohammed. And so, for example, you haven't seen people like Hishamuddin Hussein active, for example.
Bridget, very quickly, as we're running out of time, the statement by Anthony Loke about a second MOU to stabilize the Ismail Sabri government dismissed by Zahid as proof, or rather interpreted by Zahid Hamidi as proof that Pakatan is fearful of losses, not just in Johor, but nationwide if a general election is called. How do you read that?
Well, I think the MOU has not helped, my view, the opposition on the ground among its core supporters. But I also think those issues indicate a kind of politicking in terms of the differences within UMNO itself. And I do think it's probably the timing of that statement. It was very much shaped by trying to position themselves vis-a-vis each other in the election. And not necessarily think clearly about what that means. My own view, however, is that the MOU has not helped the opposition on the ground. But of course, we'll see this in the results, perhaps tomorrow night.
Bridget, thank you so much for your time. Political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh from the Asia Research Institute at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more, so stay tuned. Thanks so much for staying with Shraddha and I on Consider This. Let's continue our look at some of the key takeaways from the Johor campaign and likely voting outcomes ahead of polling day tomorrow. Joining us now is the Executive Director of Pradeka Centre, Ibrahim Sufian, more familiarly known as Ben. Ben, looking back at the campaign period for the state election, I'm just wondering, what changing dynamics, particularly between political parties and political players, have been revealed to you during this campaign trail? And I'm wondering what those changing dynamics might, how that might have consequences for party level, federal level party politics?
Yeah, I think in this particular election, you know, a lot of the pollsters and analysts are looking at pretty much the same thing. Number one, this is the first election that young voters and people who were originally eligible but didn't register are able to vote for the first time. So I think there we are looking at likely turnout rates and also their inclination. Within the younger set of voters, I think there's a lot of interest to see how will young voters, particularly Malay voters, turn out as well as make their choices? Because Johor is the stronghold of UMNO. And even in 2018, despite losing the state election at that point in time, UMNO Johor still retained about 60% of the Malay votes in the state. And so what we wanted to look at was, does the pattern hold for younger Malay voters as well, or would there have been an erosion? That's the first part. The second part is we wanted to look at how will these voters make their choices now that the opposition front has fragmented into different parties and different coalitions. And there we want to look at specifically whether the patterns that we saw took place in Malacca, which was the massive erosion of support of Malay voters away from Pakatan Harapan to Perikatan Nasional. Does that hold true for Johor as well? Because if that holds true, then that may say something about general elections as we approach general elections, perhaps towards the end of the year or early next year. And then finally, we also wanted to look at the kind of narratives that are at play and whether or not these narratives, as well as the play of personalities, can make any differences in the actual ground campaign. And there, I think there's something there that differentiates one area and compared to the rest.
Ben, you've tantalized us with many questions that you asked your respondents, but you haven't actually told us what the results are of those surveys. Could you have us give us a sense of why, where you think and where the data is leading you in terms of the ground dynamic?
Yeah, I think in terms of what we have found so far, it is quite clear that DN definitely holds the advantage in the sense that they continue to have a very loyal base of core supporters, which I presume they will have the means and the logistics to turn out on election day. And therefore, this whole argument about voter turnout, you know, means a lot less for them because they do have a well-honed machinery that's going to mobilize the supporters out. So the turnout amongst DN hardcore supporters probably is going to be very high tomorrow, probably in excess of 90%, because they've already identified who their people are. They've already assigned vehicles. So I think start tomorrow morning from 8 o'clock onwards, their people are going to start to line up and vote. So if you look at, say, weather patterns and so on, I think most of the DN so-called Senarai Putih or white list voters will show up and vote before 2 p.m. And so what then remains is, how will the rest fare? So I think our results seems to indicate that the other political parties, I think, aside from the DAP, are going to have a really uphill struggle to try and maintain their hold in the seat. I think first and foremost, let's say we look at the DAP, they will potentially continue to perform well in the massively Chinese majority seats. But we strongly suspect that they're going to see an erosion in their majority, partly because the turnout is going to be substantially lower compared to GE14. But for the other parties that are going to contest in a mixed ethnic seat, and Johor is a mixed ethnic state, the ethnic voting pattern will continue to persist, but also at different varying levels across the generation. So parties like PKR, like Amanah, like Bersatu, are all going to have a tough time clinging on to the seats that they won in 2018.
Ben, just to ask about the particularly DAP and looking at Pakatan Harapan, what would be some of the federal level consequences if there is failure on the part of Pakatan Harapan to hold on to its gains in Johor?
Yeah, I think this is where I think things become very interesting as we try to gaze into the crystal ball and try to peer into the future. Because Johor, like many of the West Coast Peninsula seats, are multi-ethnic. So like Negeri Sembilan, like Selangor, to some extent, there are multi-ethnic seats. There are a lot of parliamentary seats that reside in this state, but it doesn't speak about the whole country. So you will still have, you know, massively Malay majority seats that are in other states. in the East Coast, in the North, North Perak and Pahang and so on. I think in those places, the play, the state of play is going to be substantially different. But in the West Coast seats, where mixed ethnic composition prevails, is that definitely going to show difficulty for Pakatan Harapan to hang on, particularly parties like PKR, because if the pattern in Johor continues what we saw in Malacca, which is more than half of their Malay votes ran away to Perikatan or even Barisan Nasional or parties like MUDA, for example, then they are going to have a tough time clinging on to many of the mixed seats in a 3-4-way contest in the future. So nationally, we may see Barisan Nasional appear to be ascendant, you know, psychologically speaking, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to have a massive thumping majority in the future. Because what we saw in some of the voting patterns in Malacca, and likewise some of what the surveys currently in Johor suggest, many of the young voters are not actually very excited about Barisan Nasional anyway, and Malay voters. Not very. When we asked people whether they felt Barisan Nasional has changed for the better, less than half of the Malay voters said so. Many people felt it hasn't changed, maybe around 40%. About 30% said, you know, it's actually gotten worse. You know, so you can imagine that only perhaps a third of Malay voters felt that it has improved. And among young voters, this, I think, speaks of the sense of, you know, poor choices that are available out there. They don't quite trust Pakatan Harapan. They don't think UMNO has improved because UMNO has not really offered any kind of clear leadership or transition towards a new national leadership that's free from integrity issues, nor has it really articulated a very strong case for recovery in Johor. So a lot of people are not very excited about the choices that are on offer.
Ben, what about Perikatan? Because some of the hottest competition, as you were, for ideas or the kind of vitriol and invective between parties happened between UMNO and Bersatu. Bersatu was leading Perikatan. Do you think that we might actually see not Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's Waterloo in Johor, but actually a sense that Perikatan is here to stay as a political force in the country?
Well, I think yes and no. You know, number one, I think what's really important is the whole psychological aspect of the election. If Bersatu is able to claw a couple of seats, you know, despite the difficulty that it faces in this contest, then I think it does give the party stalwarts and the leadership and its hardcore a sense that this party has a chance of survival, because then the leadership is intact. They might have a seat at the negotiating table and therefore be able to negotiate in a post-election scenario. But if, let's say, they lose badly in this election, then I think it is going to cause some dissension within the ranks, and lack of confidence may take place within the ranks. And so Tan Sri Muhyiddin will have this job of trying to maintain the confidence of his people to stay the course and stay for the general election. And you know, he may also have to reconsider, you know, how long he wants to be in a coalition with Barisan Nasional at the federal level, because it's quite clear, writings on the wall, that it's going to be a lot tougher moving ahead. So that's one thing. But if you look at, and this is where I think the analysts are having an interesting time analyzing this. If you look at the actual details of the result, it does appear that within younger Malay voters, many are turning to Perikatan as an alternative Malay party, you know. And that gives some hope in the more Malay-dominated constituencies in different parts of the country. So I wouldn't say that it's time to write off Perikatan. In fact, you need to look into the details and see how people show up and make their choices tomorrow, particularly younger Malays, because it might give them a lead in other states, maybe not in Johor or not in Malacca, but in other states where Malay voters make up a big chunk of the electorate.
Ben, can I follow that up with a question about, you put it, you know, there might be some deeper long-term trends that favour Perikatan, but in the short term, especially as party, the party faithful, if they're outside of power, if they do not get the kind of rewards that come with power, your sense of whether the party will hold, because there have been attempts to undermine Bersatu by having people, you know, as it were, return to UMNO. Do you think the party can withstand that kind of pressure?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's the whole psychology of this, contest, in the sense that it's a confidence game, where I think Barisan Nasional, particularly UMNO, has been successful in conjuring this image that they're on the upsurge, they have this momentum of winning state election, and create the impression that the electorate is choosing them. But I think if one, peers into some of the details, it does appear that actually the support has not really increased. In fact, we sort of anticipate that in Johor tomorrow, so here I'm sticking my neck out again, that we think that the overall support for UMNO might shrink a little, perhaps by a degree of 5 to maybe 10% amongst Malay voters. But that in itself is not going to degrade their ability to win seats, because their opponents are fragmented and not working together. So I think if this election turns out a result that's bad for the opposition, particularly those that are contesting in the middle, like Bersatu as well as PKR, I think the rational leadership will be to find a pragmatic way to work together, find some way to cooperate, because otherwise both are staring at the oblivion, come general election.
And but the challenge very quickly,
I think the challenge for political leadership is, how does it manage the coalition partners? So Bersatu will have to manage PAS, and PKR or others will have to manage the DAP.
Okay. Well, we've run out of time, unfortunately, Ben. We can continue talking to you for many more hours, but we'll have to see what the results are tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Ibrahim Sufian of Merdeka Center, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.
Good night.